Before we begin this morning's debate, I would just like to say a few words about the history of debates at St. Joe's. Last year was our 30th year of doing debates here at St. Joe's. I thought it was this year. I was on WBEN last year talking about our debate, and I thought we began the debates in 1985. A former student emailed me and said, "Mr. Lina, I was at that debate. It was 1984. So for that reason, I want to just talk very briefly about the history of our debate, which is unique in Western New York because there are no other high schools or colleges in our community that do what we do here. One of our faculty members was at that first debate. Before he comes up here, I would like you to think about who it is. I would invite that faculty member now to come up to the podium, please. Yeah. So I think Mr. McHale was in the 10th grade back then.
That's correct.
And he was still taller than me then as well.
When I was 10 years old, I was still taller than you.
Thank you. We're getting off to a rough start.
We are.
At any rate, Mr. McHale, as a 15 or 16-year-old student in 1984 at St. Joe's, what were you thinking about? Did you take this seriously, or were you indifferent? What were your thoughts?
I took it very seriously. I came from a family that's fairly political. The year 84 was a presidential election. Ronald Reagan was running for re-election, and my recollection is the debate was a proxy debate for Ronald Reagan and Walter Mondale with David Swartz and Bill Paxson, who, as everybody should know, is a St. Joe's alum who was a member of Congress, although at that time, State Assembly, right?
Yes.
Yeah, State Assemblyman. So I took it very seriously. It was an exciting moment. I think the boys responded very well. They were actually very excited. My biggest recollection of the debate is there was a lot of national defense and strategic issues. It was the height of the Cold War. The Rambo movies were coming out. It was...
Excellent. Do you remember any other debates, your junior or senior
year? I remember,
year?
I think, all of them. And to me, the most interesting one was when Jimmy Griffin was here. And it was one of the first times I saw a prop used in a debate to great effect. Mm-hmm. You remember he
I
had
remember
the list.
That, yeah.
He had a list of $1,000 donors to Dennis Gorski's campaign. And he had old-fashioned computer paper. If you remember, it was all tied together, and it had the, well, you guys don't remember it, but faculty remembers that. And he held it up, and the list dropped all the way down, and everybody said, ooh. And then his list was, I don't know, he had it on a napkin or something like that, because those who remember Jimmy Griffin, he knew how to work a room.
Yeah, the most memorable line, one that I probably wouldn't encourage candidates to use, was used by the late Honorable Jimmy Griffin. And the person he was running against, I don't want to mention his name, he's still alive, and the mayor looked at him and said, "You know what? Every time you open your mouth, you tell another lie. I think I'm going to start calling you Pinocchio." And then he called him Pinocchio throughout the debate. So we had a few memorable moments here. Thank you, Mr. McHale.
No, my great pleasure. Thank you very much.
So for those of you that do not know, we have had just about every office debate here. Mayor of Buffalo, Erie County Executive, Erie County Sheriff, House of Representatives, State Senate, and the leaders of both the Democrat and Republican county leaders debate here as well. So we do this because this is a student forum. I have been asked if we would partner with other stations or newspapers, and I have declined because I want to keep this a student debate. And as I look at it, I think these two candidates would agree, this is a neutral court. We're nonpartisan. We're here to listen to an exchange of ideas, regardless of whether you have the little D or R next to your name. And I want to thank all of you for your attention this morning and for being so eager to have this debate. So on that note, let's begin. 4 years ago, Mr. Mark Poloncarz was a candidate for Erie County Executive when he visited St. Joe's to discuss the issues raised in the 2011 campaign against Chris Collins. As I told both candidates this morning, all of those students are gone, and most of those students will be voting this year in Erie County. First impressions are lasting. We are asked to do two simple things by our government. I know most of you will vote and serve on a jury. And I also know that there will be some students in this room that are going to serve in public office in a variety of positions, as there already are. This morning, all right, I would point out to our underclassmen that have never been to a debate, I encourage you to listen carefully and enjoy the exchange of ideas between our two candidates. St. Joe's is a proud tradition of sponsoring political debates for the last 31 years, and we are very grateful to the two men who have joined us this morning to continue this tradition. The issues that will be discussed will ultimately have an impact on each one of us. The topic is the future of Erie County. At one time, Erie County was part of Niagara County, and in 1821, it became a separate political entity. During this time period, it has gone through a number of political transformations and currently consists of 27 towns and cities, including the city of Buffalo. The county has a population of just under 1 million and an operating budget that is approximately $1 billion. The current government of Erie County consists of 11 county legislators who are elected to a 2-year term, and of course the county executive who is elected to a 4-year term. The format for today's debate will be as follows. Each candidate will begin with a 2-minute opening statement. Next, our panel will ask each candidate a number of direct questions that will allow the respective candidate 1.5 minutes to respond, followed by a 45-second rebuttal. Time will dictate the number of questions that each candidate will be asked. Finally, the debate will conclude with a 3-minute closing statement from each of our candidates. The moderator reserves the right to ask the candidates a direct question. Each candidate will begin 1.5 minutes to respond to a question that I ask with no rebuttal. Our panel this morning is from the AP American Government class, who will be asking the questions: Liam Baker, Matthew Berardi, Mohammed Altagori, and Ian Rapp. Our timekeeper is Adam Smolka. The fact checkers are Max Chanowski and Jeff Remerzek. The question and panel moderator is Mr. Patrick McHale, my colleague from the St. Joe's History Department and my friend. This debate would not be possible without his valuable assistance. I also want to thank Mrs. Meyer, who has done a tremendous amount of work. When I started this in 84, I had no help, and I don't think I could do it today without their help. As a matter of fact, I know I couldn't. At this time, I would like to introduce each of our candidates. The Republican, Conservative, and Independent Reform candidate for Erie County Executive is Mr. Ray Walter. Mr. Walter attended Eldred Central High School, has a degree from SUNY Geneseo, and has a Juris Doctorate from the University at Buffalo Law School. In 2009, Mr. Waller won a special election to the, was appointed to the Erie County Legislature, where he served until he won a special election in 2011 to the New York State Assembly. In 2012, he won re-election and continues to serve the state as an assemblyman. The Democrat, Working Families, and Woman Equality Party candidate for Erie County Executive is Mr. Mark Poloncarz. Mr. Poloncarz graduated from Lackawanna High School and then went on to the State University of New York at Buffalo. After receiving his bachelor's degree, Mr. Poloncarz attended the University of Toledo Law School, where he also received a Juris Doctorate degree. In 2005, Mr. Poloncarz was elected to the position of Erie County Comptroller, and in 2011, he was elected to his current position of Erie County Executive. At this time, we will begin the morning's debate, and based on a coin toss conducted earlier, Mr. Waller will begin with opening statements, followed by Mr. Poloncarz. Each candidate will have 2 minutes. Mr. Waller.
Thank you, Ted, and good morning. And, you know, I'm very happy to be here and participate in this grand tradition at St. Joseph's Collegiate Institute. I'm Ray Walter, and I'm running for county executive to be the strong leader that Erie County taxpayers deserve. I've run a campaign about ideas, about my vision for the future of Erie County. I proposed a bold, fair share tax plan that will cut property taxes by modernizing our 40-year-old sales tax sharing agreement. A lot's changed in Erie County since 1977. I don't know if any of you have seen the new trailer for the Star Wars movie. Well, that's the seventh in the series. The first one came out in 1977, and I'm sure Mark and I were waiting online to see it with great anticipation, as we both are to see the new one. But this bold fair share tax plan will cut property taxes. In 1977, almost 40 years ago, more than half of the population lived in the cities. Now it's less than a third. Yet the residents in the cities get more than half of all the sales tax collected. That's twice as much per person than the residents in the rest of the county. I've also proposed growth and opportunity zones to invest private sector dollars in areas of our county that have been forgotten. If we target the poorest communities in our region and eliminate sales tax, freeze property taxes, and create a blanket policy for ECIDA to approve projects in those areas, we can drive private sector investment into the most struggling parts of our community that haven't seen any investment in decades. Again, I'm Ray Walter. I'd appreciate your vote, or at least your parents' vote, on November 3rd. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Our next opening remarks will be made by Mr. Poloncarz.
Thank you, Mr. Lena. I want to thank you, Mr. McHale, the brothers, all the faculty and staff here at St. Joe's, but mostly the students, for opening up your school to us today. I'm sure you'd much rather be in your classroom studying than doing this for the next hour and a half. But truthfully, I do thank you for it, because 4 years ago when I was here in the county executive debate, it truthfully was a great debate with very difficult questions that I know the AP American Studies government class has put together, so I'm looking forward to it. Now, 4 years ago when I ran, none of you were here, faculty and staff were here, but when I ran, if you remember, and when I was your age at that time, I wouldn't have cared about the county executive debate. But Mr. Lane is right, because local government is the portion of government that affects you the most. It's the one that has a direct impact on your daily life. And 4 years ago when I ran, I made some promises to the people of Erie County. I promised the people of Erie County that we'd work together to grow our economy. And we have. When I was elected and took office in January of 2012, the unemployment rate was 8.9%. It's now down to 5.1%, and we've created as a community more than 12,000 jobs. Why does this matter? Because when I graduated high school in 1985 and college in 89, almost every one of the individuals in my generation had to leave this area to get a job. You won't have to. We're having an economic renaissance in our community, and as a result, if you choose to stay here, you can stay here because you can find a good paying job. 4 years ago, we were talking about the Bills lease because we were worried whether the Bills were going to leave town. I promised the people of Erie County I'd get a Bills lease done, and I did, and now the Bills are here to stay under the ownership of the Pagulas. I promised the people of this community that we'd invest in our parks and libraries and roads, and we did that. And if you came here just 3 years ago or 2 years ago, you would have known Kenmore Avenue to be one of the worst roads in all of our community. And now it is being repaved and is one of the best roads in our community. Working together, we've created a community that we know is truthfully a great community and one that we can all be proud of. And I look forward to working for you for another 4 years.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to ask each candidate a direct question, and the timekeeper, please give them a minute and a half. Please remember there is no rebuttal. Frequently, you hear people that work for the county complain about salaries and that they haven't been given raises that they deserve. The one position that I never hear anybody complain about in terms of salary is the county executive salary. Now, by our standards, it's very good. It's $103,000 approximately each year. And if you were the CEO of a company with a $1 billion budget and thousands of employees and the responsibility that is mandated by the county charter, you would seem to think that you should be paid a little bit more. The Buffalo News is regularly covered this issue and list all of the county employees and city employees who earn more than the mayor and earn more than the county executive. I'm going to begin with Mr. Waller. Do you think this is an adequate salary in light of the fact that many of the political appointees and county employees earn more than this?
Well, I think it's fine, and we run based on what the salary is, and certainly we, you know, factor that into our decision. But, you know, I don't think, and I don't want to speak for Mark, but we get into this because we have a passion for public service, because we believe in the community, because we think we can make changes to make the people's around us lives better, to make a better future for you and your families, and that's why we get into public service. It's not because of the money. I'm an attorney, Mark's an attorney, you know, we could probably go out in the private sector and earn more money, of course, but that's not where our passion is. That's not where my passion is. I want to be able to work for you, to make sure that you have opportunities, that there are jobs, that you can afford to live here, that you're not overburdened by extremely high property taxes, and that's one of the biggest things holding us back. The governor himself has said that our property taxes are the highest in the country. In Erie County, we have some of the highest property taxes in the entire nation. 16th overall as compared to, on basis of the value of your home. 60th is compared to the value of your income. Our property taxes are too high. We need to find ways to drive those down so you can afford to live here, so companies can be here and afford to have jobs for you to work at someday. So that's what my passion is. I want to make sure that we can have a great future for all residents of Erie County, and that has nothing to do with what we get paid.
Thank you. Mr. Polenkers.
Truthfully, the salaries for elected officials are lower than they would have been if there hadn't been a change in the law. There is what is called a Citizen Salary Review Commission, which is supposed to meet every 2 years and make recommendations on the salaries of elected officials. They hadn't met for a number of years because prior leaders were afraid to actually impanel them. Most of my commissioners, my deputy county executive, all make substantially more money than I do. You would never have a business in which the chief executive officer, of which the county executive is Erie County, would make substantially less than the vice presidents. But that's what we have. And it's not just the county executive. The county comptroller, the county sheriff, the clerk, they all make substantially less. I believe the undersheriff makes around $120,000 a year, while the sheriff makes $79,000 a year. Because of, truthfully, the inability of a Charter Revision Commission to meet. The Charter Revision Commission met last year. They made recommendations for the increase of all the elected official salaries. It was sent to the legislature for approval, and the legislature did not act upon it. That's the law. That's how the law is. So as an elected official, that's what you deal with. I didn't get in this to make more money. I agree with Ray. If I stayed in the private sector and I was practicing law for one of the firms in town, I'd be making much more money now than I am, truthfully, if I was still an attorney. You get into this business because you do want to serve the public and create a better life for your people in your community. And that's one of the things that we've been able to do during my administration. We've been able to create a better life for our community.
Thank you, Mr. Polenkers. Our first direct question will go to Mr. Waller. Just as a reminder, you have a minute and a half and a 45-second rebuttal.
Mr. Walter,
if elected, you have said that you intend to implement a fair tax plan, which would redistribute money from the county sales tax, which currently stands at 8.75%. Your plan would give the city of Buffalo, which has the greatest need for tax dollars, fewer of them, while giving the suburban communities more. However, it has been suggested that an overhaul of the sales tax plan is beyond the power of Erie County Executive and that such a decision rests in the hands of the state. How would you plan to go about that alteration of the current tax system, and would it be fair to take money from a city that is in dire need of it?
Well, first of all, it is not does not require the state approval to overhaul the sales tax agreement. The sales tax agreement is struck between the county and the three cities, and any one of the members of that agreement can withdraw from it at any time. There's been a 2004 law that's been referenced that does not limit the ability of the county to withdraw from that agreement. All it does is say that the Buffalo Fiscal Stability Authority still needs to get at least 200% of debt service, and we would still supply that. You have to remember, when we're talking about the city of Buffalo right now, it's on the comeback. It's got $146 million in reserve. It's in best some of the best financial condition that it's ever been in. They've also just loaned $15 million to West Seneca School District. If the city can be the bank for the rest of the county, then I don't think that rearranging the sales tax agreement that hasn't been touched since 1977 is a bad plan. One of the biggest things hurting our area is high taxes. This is a way to drive some of that those taxes to areas where the taxes are even higher. You also have to remember that social services are run by the county. So when we talk about helping out those who are less fortunate, all of the human services programs are run at the county level, not the city level. So we will still be providing all of those services to the people who are in the worst shape.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Poloncarz?
It's a bad plan that'll do more harm than good. City of Buffalo is the third or fourth poorest city in America, depending on how you look at the statistics. I sit on the Buffalo Fiscal Stability Authority, and I can tell you that there are still issues in the city of Buffalo, but there are significant problems with the Buffalo Municipal Housing Authority, and we don't need to talk about the Buffalo School District and talk about the issues there. But the city of Buffalo provides a substantial amount of funding to the Buffalo Public Schools. If you take money away from the city of Buffalo at a time when it truly does need it, you're only going to hurt the city. And you haven't talked about the cities of Lackawanna and Tonawanda, and the city of Lackawanna is on tough financial times as well. This is just a political ploy to try to get votes in an election year. Why? I'm a Democrat. He's a Republican. But since County Executive Rakowski, a Republican, then a Democrat, a Republican, a Republican, and a Democrat, we've all looked at this and we all realized it would be bad for the community, so nobody proposed
Thank
it.
Thank you, Mr. Poloncarz. Our next direct question will go to Mr. Poloncarz.
Mr. Poloncarz, the poverty rate in Erie County is 14.6%, yet the poverty rate in the city of Buffalo is 30.1%, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Those living in the suburbs are becoming wealthier and wealthier, while those in the city are slumping deeper and deeper into a poverty that is being passed along from generation to generation. Mr. Poloncarz, you've campaigned on poverty before and created a committee to try and address it in September. What will this committee be doing, and how will it address the systemic aspects of poverty?
It is a particular, it's a serious issue, and truthfully, if I am privileged to serve as county executive again, it's going to be one of the prime concerns of my administration. I did not just introduce a poverty committee. I introduced a complete comprehensive health and human services plan, initiatives for a stronger community, with approximately 50 initiatives to address these types of issues of poverty, not just in the city of Buffalo, but throughout all of the county. The one thing we know is the county is the primary provider of health and human services, is that poverty exists all over our county. The urban, suburban, and rural. But you can't have a strong county if you have a weak city center. As goes the city of Buffalo, so goes the suburbs, and so go the rural areas. So we need to ensure that we're implementing policies to try to reduce poverty. Will we ever be able to reduce poverty 100%? Probably not. But what we can do is try to lower that rate and also ensure that people who live in poverty have a better life. That's why I came up with the Initiatives for a Stronger Community, 50 initiatives that are being implemented by the various departments in Erie County government to help people in need. One of the greatest ways that you can help somebody is truthfully to educate them. That's why we have a component for workforce development and education. I know each and every one of you is coming from St. Joe's is going to have a great education. You're going to be able to find a job. But not everybody in our community is graduating with a high school degree. We need to ensure that those people are employable so they do not fall on the poverty rolls. That's what we've done in my last 4 years, and we're going to continue to do if I'm privileged to continue to serve.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Waller?
The best way out of poverty that I know is through a good job. What Mr. Poloncarz has proposed is just to make people more comfortable in poverty, not to help them actually get out of poverty. What I've proposed are growth and opportunity zones, where we freeze property taxes, eliminate sales tax, and create ECIDA blanket policy where we can drive private sector investment into the poorest areas of our community that have been completely ignored. Also, my sales tax sharing plan drives an extra $7.5 million into Buffalo Public School District, as well as the Lackawanna and City of Tonawanda School District. So we're investing more money into education. Finally, ECC, which is the best job retraining facility that we have in the county, has been virtually ignored under my opponent's administration, and we need to put more money into ECC.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Mr. Walter.
Mr. Walter, you have opted your children out of New York's newly implemented Common Core exams and called for the resignation of the New York State Education Commissioner over their implementation. You say that our kids deserve a cure from Common Core. What exactly is your complaint about the standards, and what alternative would you suggest?
Well, the biggest problem is that we've created this system intentionally to make a crisis in public schools. The cut scores have been changed to be set at a level that are virtually unattainable for 70% of the students in our population. And then we're going to say, oh, well, our public schools are failing. Well, they're not failing. We've had some of the best public schools in the country over the last few decades, and we've actually done more damage over the last 3 years under the governor's initiatives than any good. We have proposed a plan. It's called the Apple Plan. It would invest more money into public education. It would create a real commission, a panel, that would review the Common Core standards, actually have educators and principals and parents on that panel to review what the standards are and what they should be, make sure they're age appropriate. They're completely inappropriate for students with disabilities. They have absolutely no relationship whatsoever to their learning ability. They're based on only their age. So there are a lot of problems with our public education system that have been created by this Common Core and this overtesting. The final piece is we shouldn't be evaluating teachers based on the outcome of a standardized test. There's no rational study that's ever been done that says that's a good way to measure the value of our teachers. I'm sure everyone in this room who has a great teacher would say they've learned a lot more from them than could ever be measured by a standardized test.
Thank you. Mr. Poloncarz, your rebuttal.
Well, I do agree that we shouldn't be tying teacher evaluations to testing. I do believe that there is a value to testing, because remember, Common Core is not just a local or even a state. It's programs and initiatives that are countrywide to ensure that our country can compete on an international scale. When you go to college, you're going to see individuals from all across the world, and you're not going to just be competing against somebody from Kenmore and Tonawanda and Lackawanna and Cheektowaga and Amherst. You're going to be competing against people from South Korea, from India, from the old Soviet republics, and of course all of Europe and South America. We need to ensure that that our graduating classes across the board in the United States are up to the standards that they need to be. Unfortunately, many times when you see the test results of American students compared to the average students across the world, we're below. We should be higher.
Thank you, Mr. Poloncarz. Our next direct question will be to Mr. Poloncarz.
Mr. Poloncarz, this past August, NRG Energy announced its intent to close the Huntley Station power plant in the town of Tonawanda on March 1, 2016. The resulting loss of tax revenue to the Canton School District, the town of Tonawanda, in Erie County will amount to nearly $6 million, according to the Buffalo News. Also according to the news, it will mean an end to the release of 56,000 pounds of pollutants into the environment. Can the county do anything to help mitigate the lost revenue? And what can the county do to help clean up and repurpose the plant site, a potentially high revenue waterfront location?
The county will lose approximately $500,000 annually if the plant should close. I've had negotiations and discussions not only with members of the Cuomo administration about what can be done potentially to save the plant, but if the plant should close, what could be done then? And I just met actually last week with a group of individuals who might be interested in converting it to a biomass fuel plant. So instead of burning coal, it takes wood pulp and things like agriculture
leftovers and burn them. You would not create as much electricity, you would not save as many jobs, but you would have a plant that actually has jobs there. So there's things that the county can do, but in the end, when it comes to it, if NRG decides to close the plant and the New York Public Service Commission authorizes them to do that, and the Public Service Commission is analyzing this right now to ensure that this won't have a negative impact on our power grid, if they do close the plant, there's not a whole lot the county can do to stop them. Our goal then is to ensure that we train the individuals who work there so they can get other jobs and get that plant back to productive use as quickly as possible so it does not have the tax drain that it would on all the municipalities. The county could handle it from a tax issue. The school district as well as the town could not. It would have a tremendous impact on your annual budget, so we have to ensure that we can keep that plant productive as long as we can.
Thank you. A rebuttal, Mr. Waller?
Well, this is a perfect example of why my fair share tax plan is so critical. My plan will drive almost $5 million into the town and to the school district. The school district is already struggling. We've seen school closures and over 100 layoffs within the school district. A fair share plan will drive more tax dollars into that school district to help save some of those jobs and to be able to sustain the tax base when the NRG plant shuts down. So, you know, we talk about struggling areas of our community. Certainly Tonawanda and the Kenton School District is going to be a struggling area when we're talking about the loss of that much in tax dollars. But we can save that, we can help that by addressing my fair share plan and getting more of those sales tax dollars into Tonawanda, into the Kenton School District.
Thank you. I'd like to ask a question of each candidate and there will be no rebuttal. As we're all very much aware, in Washington as well as Albany in our local area, there have been a number of political scandals and elected officials that, quite frankly, have left in disgrace. Our president is limited to two terms, and I'm wondering if either of you would support term limits for executives in our local area or county legislators. Mr. Waller.
Well, I certainly think that when there's an issue, to have a new set of eyes, fresh set of eyes, is a good idea. You also limit the choice of the voters when you have term limits. But I support term limits because I think that we've seen over the years that as people serve in a certain position for a really long time, they start to accumulate more and more power, owe more and more favors to individuals. For example, the county executive, he criticized my opponent 4 years ago for taking thousands of dollars from the Harris Beach law firm, yet he's turned around and taken the exact same amount of dollars from the Harris Beach law firm, $10,000 donation, the last check, because they do work for the ECIDA that he controls. So I think term limits are good because you can avoid accumulation of power and owing those favors and collecting those campaign donations over the years. So I think, term limits are a good thing. We also need to make sure we're term limiting, committee chairs and heads of, the legislative bodies in their capacities, so we can get a new set of eyes into these things and be able to really represent the people and not the special interests.
Thank you. Mr. Poelenkers.
I don't agree in term limits. I don't agree with term limits. We have a democracy, and a democracy allows you to vote the individual off out of office if you don't think they're doing a good job. And if you don't believe that, all you get to look at is me, because 4 years ago, not many people gave me a chance to run and win against my opponent, who was in his first term. But we worked hard, we told the people about the issues, and we won. I'm not a favor of term limits. I never have been. Democracy works. My opponent just made a shot at me saying, in some ways, my ethics are as weak as my opponent's were 4 years ago. I'll remind my opponent that at one time during my term, I received a $25,000 donation from a law firm that I returned because I did not think it would be appropriate to accept it at a time that we were taking a look at hiring, and it was a law firms to do work for Erie County. I may be the first and only elected official in county history, for that matter, probably state and local history, who returned a substantial donation because I did not want to make it appear that I was being up for sale. I'm not up for sale. People are supporting my candidacy. I will not deny that. We've received hundreds and hundreds of donations from average citizens. But don't ever say that my administration is up for sale.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Mr. Walter.
Mr. Walter, you have previously stated that you believe not even $1 of tax money should go to the construction of a new stadium for the Bills. Ralph Wilson Stadium is the sixth oldest stadium in use by NFL teams. If the NFL gives Erie County an ultimatum about building a new stadium, would you support using taxpayer money to keep the Bills in Buffalo?
Well, I don't think it will come to that, and I don't believe that we should use taxpayer dollars on a new stadium. There's older stadiums, Arrowhead Stadium, Lambeau Field. They've all been refurbished over the years, and those are perfectly good stadiums. We have a great stadium in Orchard Park. It's one of the best game day experiences in all of the NFL. And we just put $130 million into renovating it. Now is not the time to talk about investing taxpayer dollars into a new stadium, no matter where that stadium might be. We need to do what we can to keep the Bills here. Certainly, there's no bigger Bills fan than I am. But the idea that we should invest taxpayer dollars in a community that is still struggling, in a community that has some of the highest property taxes in the entire country, in a community that has some of the highest sales tax in the entire country, is not the appropriate path that we should be taking. Definitely would not want to invest any taxpayer dollars into a new Bills stadium.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Poloncarz?
Well, I'm proud of the work that we were able to do to get the new Bills lease done. I'm actually writing a book, so I hope when it comes out you guys actually read it. It's quite interesting that it happened behind the scenes, and trust me, you don't know anywhere near the half of it of how it took to get a Bills lease done when you're dealing not only with the Bills, but the NFL and New York State. The current facility, if we invest in it, the structure of it, the infrastructure, the girders, the concrete, they could last another 25 years. I'm very happy that Mr. Pegula came out and said he's pleased with this stadium. We are in the third year of a 10-year lease. We have to keep options on the table, but I can tell you right now, if we invest in the stadium, it will be there for many, many, many years to come. Now, the one thing we don't want to do is lose our team. I don't think this team's going to go anywhere under the Pegulas. I've said they're going to keep it here as long as they own it. But I do know the NFL wants a new stadium. We need to do what's right to ensure that we're doing the best thing for the community and the Bills, not necessarily the NFL.
Thank you, Mr. Poloncarz. If we could just stay on this issue for a minute, I know it's something that our students are concerned about, and so are the people of Erie County. If it happened that we were compelled to build a stadium, or Mr. Pegula wanted to build a stadium, would you expect the owner of the team to pay for the entire construction project, as has happened in some cities? And if not, what percentage of the cost do you believe the state and the county should bear? Should this be strictly an owner-built project, or should it be a partnership of sorts with the state of New York fronting quite a bit of it, the county of Erie, and also Mr. Pegula? Mr. Poloncarz, I'm going to start with you this time.
Well, I think, and I hope Ray would agree, you don't negotiate prior to negotiations by letting the public know exactly where you stand on the issues. If you remember during the Bills lease negotiations, the media was always asking questions and we wouldn't tell them what was happening behind the scenes because we didn't want to compromise our positions. We currently, in the $130 million lease, the state pays 60, the county pays 40, the Bills pay 30. I think it's important that we understand that we cannot break the county's bank, piggy bank, and we cannot break the state's piggy bank to build a new stadium in which the vast majority of the revenue is not going to the community, it's going to owners, including other NFL owners across the league. If the Pegulas want to have that conversation, it's a conversation I'm willing to entertain, but I'm not going to lay out our position now and then compromise our discussions later.
Mr. Waller?
Let's think about this. A new stadium is going to, if we build a new stadium, probably be downtown. That's $1 billion for a new stadium. But that doesn't count the cost of all of the infrastructure that's going to go on around it. The streets, the utilities, the off-ramps and on-ramps, the parking, the mass transit that you'll have to direct towards that new stadium. So that's a $2 billion investment. The idea that we should ask Erie County taxpayers, who are the most burdened in the country, to put their hard-earned tax dollars into a brand new stadium that, and let me get this right because I was criticized for messing it up at the last debate, 8 Sundays a year, not 8 days a week, 8 Sundays a year is crazy. We should be able to say right now that if the NFL and Mr. Pegula and Mrs. Pegula want to build a brand new stadium, then they should pay for it, not Erie County taxpayers.
Thank you. Our next direct question will go to Mr. Poloncarz.
Mr. Poloncarz, Erie County is in desperate need of updated infrastructure. In Buffalo, according to the city's own website, most water lines are over 85 years old and most sewage lines are over 74 years old. Additionally, the Buffalo sewer system has 68 overflow events annually, which have caused sewage to pollute our waterways. Throughout your time in office, you have spent $90 million on infrastructure, a third of which was spent entirely on roads. Although these expenditures recognize the problem, how much do you think repairing these additional issues will cost, and how long will this take?
Well, we've actually spent much more on infrastructure. We're spending on average about $30 million a year on road bridge infrastructure. When it comes to the city of Buffalo, the county does not own a single road within the city limits. The county doesn't control the water or sewer lines. That's controlled by the Buffalo Water and Buffalo Sewer Authority. The county has its own sewer districts and its own, the Erie County Water Authority provides water issues outside of the city of Buffalo. I agree with you. There are significant problems with infrastructure all across this community. The town of West Seneca is in the same position when it comes to its sewer lines as the city of Buffalo is. This town has its own sewer control system, own district, and they need to replace that. And they're trying to turn it over to the county, but we will not take it unless the town residents are willing to invest in the system. You can't ignore infrastructure, because when you ignore infrastructure, it falls apart. The previous 8 years before my administration came, truthfully, county government was in disarray. It was in fiscal free fall. I was elected as controller in 2005 to clean up a red-green fiscal crisis that was the worst financial disaster the county ever had. We were one notch above junk bond status, and now we're in the AA category. Why? Because we made wise decisions on behalf of our people so that now we can invest in our community. My predecessor was spending on average $20 million on road and bridge repair. We're spending on average $30 million on road and bridge repair. Could you do more? Yes. But to do more, you need more money to do that. So you can't do it unless you've got the money in the piggy bank. That's what drove us into the red-green fiscal crisis, is we were spending more than we actually had. Now we're living within our means and are still getting things done.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Walter.
Well, we certainly need to invest in our infrastructure, and sewers and water treatment are a critical part of that. We need to protect our water. We need to protect Lake Erie. We need to protect the entire Great Lake water area. Making that investment is critical, and I certainly support making those investments. The problem is that we need this to be a global effort. We need it to be money from the federal government, money from the state government, because the local governments just can't take on the burden alone to fix all of our water treatment and sewer plant issues. It's going to take billions of dollars to really do it right, and I certainly would support that. But we have to make sure we're respecting the local taxpayers when we make these decisions.
Thank you. Our next direct question will be to Mr. Walter.
Mr. Walter, the future of Buffalo Metro Rail is unclear. In 1979, when construction began, the line was intended to be the first of an extensive system that would branch out to the UB Amherst campus, the Tonawandas, the airport, and the South Towns. The NFTA expects ridership on the line to increase in the coming year to 50,000 riders per day. You have stated that you will not let the Metro Rail expand through Amherst. Mr. Walter, what is your plan to accommodate that increased ridership if it's not the expansion of the Metro Rail line?
Well, actually, I didn't say I wouldn't let the Metro Rail expand through Amherst. What I said is I wouldn't let it go up Grover-Cleveland Boulevard or Bailey Avenue. Those are residential neighborhoods. Putting a Metro Rail up through a residential neighborhood is not a good plan. It will destroy those neighborhoods, and I won't let that happen. The problem with rail lines is they're very, very expensive to create and to build. So, we can't afford to spend billions of dollars on rail lines. What I've proposed is that we focus on either bus rapid transit or enhanced bus service. And that would get us the same type of ridership, but it would be much, much less expensive. And I think that's the direction that we need to go. But the problem is, you look at what the Metro Rail did to downtown Buffalo when they closed off of those streets and made them closed to vehicular traffic. It destroyed any retail in that area. We can't let that happen in this community. We need to make sure that we have enhanced services, but the best way to do that is through bus or enhanced bus service or bus rapid transit, going up Niagara Falls Boulevard where there's the most commercial activity, and then over to UB. That's what makes the most sense. Tearing up, you know, residential neighborhoods in Eggertsville is a bad idea, and I will not support that.
Thank you. Mr. Poloncarz, your rebuttal?
Well, I think everyone agrees that the current system is inadequate. There's no doubt about that. I've said personally, as someone who attended the University of Buffalo and used to go between the Main Street campus and the Amherst campus, that just taking buses is not the answer. And I don't believe anybody's talking about tearing up entire roads and putting a subway through these neighborhoods. I'm sure many of you have been up to Toronto. And what's the one thing you see in Toronto that you see all over the place in major cities across the world are streetcars that work right in the middle of the street, and they go right with the traffic. There's nothing that says you can't put a streetcar right in lines right in the middle of a street and have it stop every couple miles. It doesn't have to stop every 30 feet. It doesn't have to stop every 50 feet. But if you lived in areas where you have tremendous traffic, it can make a big difference.
Thank you. The next direct question will be to Mr. Poloncarz.
Mr. Poloncarz, the Buffalo public school system is in utter disrepair, with 45 of its schools given Fallon ratings by the Board of Regents. Yet the taxpayer spends approximately $23,000 per student, the fifth highest in the nation, according to the Buffalo News. The high school graduation rate in 2014 was 52.8%, creating a stark contrast between Buffalo City schools and those in the rest of the county. Would you support the implementation of a system in which students and parents are able to use their portion of the $23,000 to attend a school of their choice, whether it be public or private, which is commonly referred to as a voucher program?
I do not support a voucher program, which I know is not going to go over very well at St. Joe's. I never have. I think throwing more money at this issue is not going to solve it. My opponent says, hey, I got this great tax plan, and we give more money to the city schools. The issue isn't money with the city schools. There are so many problems with the city schools, but it's not enough money per student. What we need to do is ensure that we're providing the proper background, the proper education, the proper health care for young students so they can get through the issues of their lives. One of the things that we realize, in county government, we don't have any say over the Buffalo Public Schools, but we do play a role when it comes to the provision of health and human services for students in the Buffalo Public School District. And under my administration, I'm proud to say, working with our partners like Catholic Charities and others, we've been able to restore nurses and mental health evaluators in schools. So a kid who, truthfully, they thought was a bad kid, but now we know has a mental health condition, can be identified and given the treatment that they need so that they can move forward. It's going to take a community-wide effort to solve the issues in the Buffalo Public Schools. Not one individual can do it on their own. It requires the community coming together saying, enough is enough. We're not going to tolerate this.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Waller?
When we talk about the money that we're investing per student into Buffalo City Schools, you got to remember, these are kids who are coming from very poor backgrounds, who probably are going to a broken home when they go home at school, who are coming to school not fed, coming to school not properly clothed. They have a lot of issues that they're dealing with that we need to invest in. So we need to make sure that they have enough social workers, that have enough school psychologists, that there's enough truant officers going around to make sure they're coming to school. And the absentee rate at Buffalo Public Schools is outrageous. We need to make sure there's actually children in the seats. You can't do that without investing taxpayer dollars into our school system. And what are we investing in? We're investing in our future. That's the best investment we can possibly make. The other thing is we need to...
Thank you. Our next direct question to Mr. Walter.
Mr. Walter, the New York Safe Act was written in response to the Sandy Hook school shootings and has been called by Governor Cuomo the toughest gun control law in the United States. It has been the subject of great controversy. Many countries have passed resolutions in direct opposition to it, and it has faced numerous lawsuits seeking to overturn it. However, a federal appeals court just this week upheld the most important elements of the law. Do you support the law? And if you were county executive, would you carry out the SAFE Act?
I don't support the law. I voted against it, and I'm a sponsor of the repeal. It was hastily introduced in the middle of the night by the governor looking to grandstand on an emotional issue. It was fraught with problems. Part of the issue was the 7-bullet limit that's been overturned by multiple courts now. This is a case that's going to go to the Supreme Court. What it really did, it was criminalize a lot of innocent people's behavior. It did nothing to make us safer. There is nothing contained within the SAFE Act that would have prevented the atrocities at Sandy Hook or any of the other atrocities that have occurred since then. Absolutely nothing. It would have made no bit of difference. But what it has done is it's created a situation where law-abiding citizens who are simply exercising their Second Amendment rights as guaranteed to them by the Constitution, it's made them criminals because they now have to register guns that they don't want to register. And what have we seen? We've seen a massive civil disobedience because of it. The last check, only 4% of registered weapons have been actually registered with the state police. This isn't the right solution. We need to have smart solutions. We need to invest more in mental health. We need to make sure that we're keeping guns out of felons' hands. We need to make sure that the penalties for committing a crime with a stolen weapon or with an illegal weapon are increased. That's what's going to prevent gun problems.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Poelenkers.
I support the SAFE Act. The SAFE Act is there to ensure that we keep guns out of the hands of criminals and mentally ill individuals. I'm going to give you a story about what was truly one of the most emotional moments of my life. I had the pleasure to attend the State of the Union, I believe in 2013. Think about this. Yes. 13 or 14. And I attended an event beforehand. I was a guest of Congressman Brian Higgins. This was right after Sandy Hook. And there was a little girl that was at the event, and not a person spoke because she was talking about gun control. She was a student at Sandy Hook. She said, "It's ridiculous that I had to watch my fellow students die because a mentally ill individual was able to legally purchase guns through the parent." And I believe, looking back at that, that we need to ensure that we don't have any more Sandy Hooks, so we don't have little girls like that talking about their classmates who were slaughtered in front of them.
Thank you, Mr. Poelenkers. If we could just stay on this point for a minute. At the start of this school year, I asked each of my government classes, do you believe that there will be shootings that continue to take place in our school, in our schools, and that students will die? Everybody raised their hand. Yet, at the national and even the state level, there has been no comprehensive program to address the problem. My question is very simple, and it's what the students have asked. Why not? I know that both of you cannot determine this, but you are both leaders in our community. And I would like to know, first of all, Mr. Poelenkers, what plan, if any, would you support to make our schools safer? Because the perception is they are not.
Well, unfortunately, since you asked that question, there was the shooting at Umpqua Community College in Oregon, in which individuals who were just going to get an education and try to better their lives were murdered in their classrooms. Yes, there has been no movement in Washington. There certainly was movement in Albany with the SAFE Act. Truthfully, the Republican Party is bought and sold by the National Rifle Association. The National Rifle Association does not represent the hunters of this community. My father, my brother are hunters, my nephews are hunters. I talk to them about the SAFE Act, and they say, this doesn't impact us. It has no impact on our guns and our rifles. What the goal is to keep guns out of the hands of mentally ill individuals. That's what we need to do. It's as simple as that. The guns that were used in the slaughter in Umpqua were all legally bought. But if this individual had been identified as being mentally ill beforehand, shouldn't we have stopped that individual from buying them?
Thank you. Mr. Waller?
Well, we've had virtually no investment into mental health services in this state over the last 4 years under this governor's watch. Yet he blames, all of the legal gun owners for what's happening across the country, and it's just not the case. Look at this. The Second Amendment is a God-given right guaranteed by the Constitution. Unless you're proposing to change the Constitution, we have to make sure that we do everything to protect that constitutional right. Do we have to have common sense reforms? Of course. Should there be background checks? Of course. I don't think people are saying that there shouldn't be. What they're saying is that let's not criminalize people who are using firearms in a respectable and legal manner. Let's criminalize those who are doing it illegally. When we talk about gun deaths, we don't have to look any further than the city of Buffalo. And where are the majority of those murders are not happening with legally purchased weapons. They're happening with illegally purchased weapons, and they're happening in struggling neighborhoods. Well, we need to make sure we're investing in those struggling neighborhoods and making sure they have jobs and an opportunity to you know, live a good life. But that's not happening right now. We need to make sure that we protect our Second Amendment rights and we address mental health issues and we address issues of poverty. That will reduce the gun violence.
Okay, just one last point. Put a minute on the clock for each. With all due respect, I'm asking about what we can do now, not next year or 5 years from now after more students have been killed, to protect our students in school. There have been a number of plans suggested. I'm sure you're aware of them. So, Mr. Poloncarz, other than background checks, gun control, keeping the weapons, out of the hands of the mentally ill, what can we do sooner rather than later to make the schools safer?
Well, Erie Community College has armed security guards, unlike Umpqua, which had none. Not every security officer at Erie Community College is armed, but there are armed security guards at all three campuses. Short of locking down schools and having metal detectors at every entrance with security guards checking everyone coming in and out, I walked in here today. I was let in by a student, but I was not checked for a firearm. I'm not going to shoot you guys. I don't have one. I don't own a gun. But I'm fairly confident every day there's an individual who comes in here that's a parent or someone, a guardian. Unfortunately, unless you lock down the schools and have a metal detector at every door, you can't prevent a gun from getting in your school. At the community colleges, we have armed guards, but that does not mean someone's not going to be able to drive up and just start shooting somebody on the campus. It's very difficult unless you limit guns getting in the hands of the individuals who shouldn't be using them.
Mr. Waller?
Well, I mean, we live in a free society, and we have to constantly make decisions about whether we're going to give up some of our freedom for security, and those are tough decisions to make. But, I mean, would you want to sacrifice some of your teachers in order to employ armed guards around St. Joe's? I don't think so. I don't think that that's a smart decision, because the reality is that these mass shootings, although they make headlines and make a splash, occur at a lower rate in this country than in many other countries around the world. There's a higher rate in Finland, there's a higher rate in Norway, there's a higher rate in many of the Scandinavian nations, that there are actually a higher rate of mass shootings than in the United States, but they don't get as much publicity because we don't see them. So, we always have to make a decision between sacrificing our liberty and our security, and that's a decision that each individual school has to make.
Thank you. Our last direct question will go to Mr. Poloncarz.
Mr. Poloncarz, you acknowledge the series of serious problems with Child Protective Services, including the tragic death of 8-year-old Jacob Knoll. Caseworkers appear to have been overwhelmed due to high caseloads. There have been other high-profile deaths of children, despite repeated demands for help for Child Protective Services. What do you think this problem is indicative of? And do you believe you have done everything you can to solve this problem?
Well, the worst days of my administration are when we learned about the death of a child. And truthfully, gentlemen, there are many more children that die in this community than the ones you hear about that have been the big cases. There are children that die when they're in the same bed with their parents, and their parents roll over on them and crush them in the middle of the night. Unfortunately, I read lots of death fatality reports like that. Any day that a child dies is one day too many, whether it's as a result of a murder, a beating, or they die because of a rollover. Our goal in county government is to ensure that we have the resources available to protect children. We've basically increased our child protective workforce by 30 individuals. We've also increased by putting approximately 12 special investigators that are retired police officers to help with investigations. We're putting child protective service workers in the schools. We're putting child protective service workers in the hospitals that see the greatest amount of cases of childhood injury. I would love to be able to say that there will never be a death of another child in Erie County at the hands of an adult. But there are evil, evil people in the world. Why? Because Abdi Fatah Muhammad, Ian Brooks, Jacob Noe, Mayuana Smith are not the only ones. There are other ones that have died at the hands of an adult, but you don't hear about those stories because there was no CPS involvement. We have to ensure that we as a community, families, neighbors, do what's right to protect children. If you know of a neighbor that's beating their child, you should report it to CPS, because maybe one beating too many will result in the death of the child. Our goal is to ensure that we're doing all that we can as a community to protect children.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Waller.
Well, the problem is there's been no accountability from the county executive. He stood by his commissioner of social services at the time. While other people were calling for his her resignation, he stood by her and, in fact, tried to give her more responsibilities, making her acting commissioner of mental health. That's not a strong leader. That is passing the buck and not holding the people in charge of those departments accountable. When he came time to make a decision on how we were going to react, he decided to hire more management confidential employees instead of boots on the ground, instead of caseworkers. At his first chance, he went back and had to correct that decision after another tragedy, and then installed political cronies into those positions. This is not the decisions we should be making.
Thank you. I'd like to ask one last direct question, 1 minute. It's very easy, but it's something that I think our students would be interested in. Many of our students have been talking about the candidates running for president of the United States. They watch the SNL skits, and they tell me everything that's going on social media, including your account recently at, I think, the Bills game. You had Twitter going back and forth, and they were sharing that with me. I can't tweet or anything, but they have shared this with me. So my question would be twofold. First of all, who do you support of the candidates that are running in each of your respective parties for the President of the United States? And secondly, who is your favorite president in American history, former favorite president? Mr. Waller.
Walter, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's tough to make a decision right there now on the Republican side. There's a lot of candidates out there. Right now, I'm leaning towards John Kasich, the governor in Ohio. I think he's done a great job in Ohio, and he certainly seems the most reasonable and experienced person on the stage when we're talking about our current candidates for president. As far as my favorite president, that's an easy one, Ronald Reagan. You know, I grew up during Ronald Reagan, and when Ronald Reagan was in office, those kind of were my coming-of-age years, and I, you know, saw a really strong leader who was able to talk about the greatness of America, its opportunity, and a bright future. He always referred to that shining city on the hill, and that's exactly, you know, what got me interested in politics, that optimism, that opportunity, the idea of America is great because of its people, and we can be great going into the future as well, and that's who my favorite president.
Thank you
was.
Very much. Mr. Poelenkers.
I'm supporting Hillary Clinton for president. She is...
Gentlemen, this is what's great about a democracy. You can disagree, but I am supporting Hillary Clinton for president. My favorite president of all time was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. If you know anything about the history of this country and the world, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt took office, it was in the worst economic crisis ever, the Great Depression. It faced Nazism. It faced fascism, Nazis, the Italians, the threat of Japan. And here's a man who was once a vibrant individual, who was struck down by polio, never walked a day again in his life, lived in a wheelchair, but found a way to prop himself up and actually walk with the assistance of individuals so that he could attain the highest office in the world and get us through the Great Depression and get us through World War II.
Thank you very much. We will now have our closing remarks from each of our candidates. We'll begin with Mr. Poelenkers.
Thank you, Mr. Lina. It's been a pleasure to be here. It really is. You guys ask tough questions, and I appreciate that. Actually, you ask tougher questions than what we saw a week or so ago. Sorry, Mr. McCarthy, about that. But that's what this is all about. This is about answering questions from the public. And today you heard two different visions for the future of Erie County, one which is based on what we've been able to do the last 4 years to grow our community, to get us through what truthfully was the worst snowstorm that any of you have seen in your lifetime, and truthfully the worst snowstorm that I've seen since 1977. The economic malaise that had continued in this community decade after decade after decade. You guys don't know how good you have it. Because when I graduated high school, it was the thought of, where are you gonna go? I graduated Lackawanna High in 1985.
2 years after Bethlehem Steel closed, and with it the 20,000 jobs that were directly attributable to Bethlehem Steel and the other 30,000 jobs that were related to it. And that's what our community was like for decades. What's going to happen to this community? But because we've worked together, a community, public and private sector, not-for-profit, we've been able to turn Erie County into, truthfully, the community we know it always could be. One Buffalo, one Erie County. Now is not the time to create a split between the city and the suburbs. Now is the time to continue the tremendous work that we've done to create this wonderful Buffalo. When I graduated from high school and college, nobody was talking about Buffalo in newspapers. There certainly was no internet. But nobody was writing reports about Buffalo and Erie County and the wonderful things we have in our community. All you got to do is go to the internet, go to any webpage, go to Google, and look right now, and you'll see all the wonderful things that people are talking about Buffalo and Erie County. I want to continue to be the county executive because we still have more work to do to ensure that this community becomes the best it can be. I ask for the support of the people in this community. I know most of you are not eligible to vote, but some of you are. If you are, I ask for your support. Even if you don't support me, make sure you get out and vote. It is that important to vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Mr. Walter, your closing remarks, please.
Well, thank you. Our region is definitely on the rise, but, you know, the state has invested over $1 billion into our future. First, let me thank you very much for hosting the debate today. It's been great and an honor to be here and to carry on this great tradition. You're all super engaged and understand the issues and know what's going on, and I have great hope for the future of America and Erie County with awesome gentlemen like each and every one of you. But, you know, our future is on the rise, but the county executive has done very little to leverage the historic investment by the state of New York. He hasn't. I will. You've heard nothing but, you know, glowing things about what's happened in Erie County over the last 4 years. And all of this happy talk about growing jobs and, you know, better investment into roads and parks. But the reality is there's a lot of problems still facing our community. We need to help some of the parts of this community that are struggling the most. And my growth and opportunity zones will do just that. We still have one of the highest tax burdens in the nation, and my fair share plan will address that. Drive down property taxes, invest in schools, we'll fix our crumbling roads. What you haven't heard from my opponent are some of the problems that have happened under his administration. He talks about this snowstorm and what a great job he did and pats himself on the back every chance that he gets. But the reality is that 13 people died during that snowstorm. We talk about the tragedies at CPS. We touched on that a little bit. There's no accountability there. There's no action to prevent those deaths in the future. We need to invest in the Buffalo Home Visiting Program to make sure that our children are protected for the future before CPS gets involved. He talks about running a clean administration. Yet when the ECIDA changed its senior home policy to make sure that it's easier for senior home builders to build homes for our senior population, he received nearly $50,000 in donations from the biggest builder of senior homes in our community, using the LLC loophole, which I voted to close in Albany, using the LLC loophole to hide each and every one of those donations to keep them $2,000 or less. So there are a lot of problems. This isn't a scandal-free administration, as he likes to talk about. But I will be a strong leader for Erie County. I have a plan to cut property taxes, to invest our struggling communities, and I will be the strong leader for the 21st century Erie County that you will all hopefully grow up in and be a vibrant part of in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.